I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town. A dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
927, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by our friend Ramon Antonio Vargas, editor and reporter at The Guardian. Latest on the Archdiocesan bankruptcy case, which continues to go on and on and on. And you know, it's like, I'm not trying to be flip. First of all, good morning, Ramon. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having me, as always.
And you know, I complimented you guys, you and David Hammer, on Twitter about the work that you do. And I mean that sincerely, because if not for y'all, we wouldn't know about any of this, nor I don't think would the victims have the voice that they have in all of this. So I think you're doing good work. I don't mean to be flippant about this, but there's a Seinfeld episode where they say, you know, tell Kramer, you kept ringing the bell, you kept making the stops, and he says they kept ringing the bell. And the only reason I bring that up is we're going to talk about this again. Yes, because it hasn't been settled yet. With that being said, give me some background, some context for what we're about to talk about here with this highly contentious church bankruptcy case, Ramon.
Sure. I mean, right now where it stands, right, is the church, as part of the fallout of the decades-old clergy molestation crisis, scandal, what have you, filed for, you know, bankruptcy in 2020. It was only until a few months ago, really last month, that the church and attorneys representing about 500 clergy abuse claimants locally filed sort of competing claims as to competing plans on how to settle their differences. They're, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars apart. And so the judge in charge of the case, Meredith Grable, brought on a what is known as a bankruptcy restructuring professional by the name of Mo Meji to, you know, assess the plans and sort of, you know, assess the viability of them. And essentially what he ended up coming up with is that, yes, the two sides can find a resolution, and to sort of coax both sides to work toward a resolution, as, you know, it's been more than 4 years, costs have soared to more than $40 million in professional fees alone, mostly to the church's attorneys and to the church's professional advisors. Basically, his report that he issued last week suggested that all professionals involved in the matter have their pay deferred for 3 months. And if in those 3 months, during the interim, there is no settlement, to then advise the judge to then go ahead.
Let me slow down for a second, because I'm trying to understand this. Who's going to get deferred for what?
So, obviously, there's been a lot of attorneys on all sides and advisors, et cetera. So, nobody gets paid for 3 months, right?
But to be clear, the victims' attorneys have not seen a dime, have they?
That's correct. The victims' attorneys, at least the ones that are representing, this is an important distinction, right? The ones who are representing them in connection with the abuse claims, mm-hmm. right? Obviously, that is all on contingency, right? And so those people get paid at the end after the victims get their cut as well of any sort of settlement that they get. There are some attorneys who represent them collectively in the bankruptcy process. Mm-hmm. And obviously, they have been billing into the process as well.
Who paid? So, I'm just curious, Ramon, billing whom? Who pays for
the church?
That?
I mean, all this comes out of the church, right?
Okay.
And all this comes out of the church, and so
and that number's, you know, up north of $40 million, right? From an original estimate of $7.5 million.
Yeah, and I mean, that's an old figure at this point, right?
Okay.
And it's updated every now and then. So yeah, I mean, you're talking about tens of millions of dollars that have already been spent, and so the point is that if you defer, the idea is like, okay, like nobody gets paid for 3 months. If it settles, those 3 months, like eventually they will get paid those 3 months, right? But for now, it's like for these next 3 months, deferred payment And then try to work toward a settlement, because, you know, both having the opinion of this report is everyone that there is, it is possible for both sides to reach a settlement, right? We've seen it all over the country, other places who filed, other churches who filed for bankruptcy after New Orleans did, settled before New Orleans did, right? And if failing that, I guess the suggestion is to have a special examiner investigate all of the archdiocese's assets, cash, real estate, et cetera, and then make a call about whether the church filed for Chapter 11 protection, quote, in good faith. Now, why, you know, one question that kind of remains unanswered is that we're, I mean, apparently, you know, as clear as ever, we're 4 years into this process and still nobody seems to have a really good idea about how much cash and real estate their church actually has on hand. And still, you know, apparently this report is asking the question about, you know, maybe there's a chance that they didn't file this quote in good faith, meaning that they weren't really bankrupt. But that's kind of where things stand right now. As far as this case goes, the issue is that, I mean, I think there's been a hearing scheduled for next month, right? I think November 21st. So that's another month of no activity, right? That's kind of like at least three more months to go. We still need to see if the judge adopts this this report. But considering that she spent $350,000 of the church's money, and that's money that is being taken out of the pie that is sort of kind of being divvied up for poor people who are owed by the church, including abuse victims. There's no indication that she won't adopt this report and its suggestions. But so, you know, still a few more months to go, at least. And that's where things stand.
So I'm going to get back to the pie after the break. But I guess the first question is, well, let me take the break first, and we'll get back to this other question as well, which is about, is this just about cash flow? Because if you're just going to defer payments, I don't understand what we're going to accomplish here, because they're going to continue to bill. They'll just get paid after 3 months. We'll try to sort it out when we come back. I guess, bottom line, what is this going to speed up, or is it going to speed anything up? 9:35, 25 till 10, traffic now, WWL. 9:40, 20 till 10, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking with Ramon Antonio Vargas, editor and reporter of The Guardian, about a third-party expert issued a report on how to settle a highly contentious New Orleans church bankruptcy case. He and David Hammer have been reporting on this for how long, Ramon?
Years. I mean, on the bankruptcy, since it was filed. Yeah. May of 2020.
20. So let me talk about this pie. First of all, you said this piece of the pie consists of money that the Archdiocese of the church has left over after bankruptcy, or do we know how big that pie is?
So again, I mean, one of the things that the suggestion that the report makes, right, is to, if we don't settle in the next 3 months, and this was last week, right? So if we don't settle between now and what, January, since January, find out like how much cash and real estate the archdiocese actually has, right? And so you asked a question before, which was, you know, what did this accomplish? How did this move the needle forward, right? I mean, I think that there are a lot of people involved in this bankruptcy that have the exact same question, which is, you know, it's, you know, this was filed in May 2020. It's October of 2024. You know, and only now are we coming up with the suggestion of, like, let's find out, like, how much in cash and real estate the Archdiocese has, to see, like, how much it can afford to, and obviously the plan, right? And this is, again, like, I think nobody has really, like, suggested to compel the church to put up a settlement that would, you know, basically take out the Catholic Church in New Orleans, right? I mean, the idea is to make the victims whole while allowing the church to kind of continue its core mission, which is, again, what the report suggested, you know, should be done. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that there's a real level of frustration as far as what did this do other than just kind of put a pause on. It took two months for the report to be prepared at a cost of $350,000. And then, and, you know, we're talking about another 3 months to kind of see if it can be settled, right? So that's about 5 months of just kind of stretching the case out, which is, you know, frustrating for people who have, you know, been in this process for 4 years. And certainly you can see other, you know, dioceses elsewhere. You have an idea of kind of what the going rate, I hate to use that term, but you kind of have an idea of what the going rate is per abuse claim, right? The church right now is proposing $125,000 per claim with no help from insurance, right? It's just the church and you know, the archdiocese, schools, you know, other ministries. On the other side, the victims who are proposing, you know, a much higher number at $2 million per claim, the bulk of which would come from insurance, right? Not the church, not its schools. So they would, though under their plan, they would be called on to provide as well. But you have an idea, right? Los Angeles just settled about $650,000. The Catholic Church in Los Angeles paid about $650,000 for abuse claim to settle a bankruptcy out there. And on Long Island in New York, you know, the settlement was about $609,000 per claim. So it kind of gives you an idea of the range that you're kind of like trying to work toward, as you've got a very low offer from the church, you've got a very high offer from the victims. So, yeah, I mean, I think that there's some frustration there. So, like, you know, we paid $350,000 for, you know, kind of very suggestions that probably could have been made very early in the process at you know, before all this money had been spent. And also, I mean, in the last program, look, I don't want to eat up like the last few minutes that we have talking about this, but obviously there was some skepticism about the author of this report.
No, I think that's important. I wanted you to go into that. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, for an unrelated reason, and I can go into the details that you want, but
do
I mean,
that, please.
In short, I mean, you know, this was produced by a bankruptcy expert who, for his conduct in a separate case, you know, has had the FBI looking into, you know, his work and how he behaved in a separate case in Houston. Now, we can go into, you know, very quickly you kind of go down this rabbit hole about what he did and whatnot. But there was some skepticism about, you know, about what you would kind of expect to get. In the end, I think the report turned out to be kind of very vanilla suggestions of kind of both sides are responsible for the delays. Obviously the victims, attorneys are, and really the survivors are very frustrated at that sort of kind of both sides in tone where they kind of look at it. But certainly the church will feel validated that, you know, they've also said that, you know, we've been subjected to, you know, we've been subjected to sort of like pressure to settle. Whereas really the victim side is like, well, you know, if you feel pressure to settle because, you know, our side has exposed evidence of crimes, in that, you know, are contained in information that was sealed off in the bankruptcy that got out to the public, through no small part because of David Hammer and I, reporting on it. And then to the point that, you know, there is a state police investigation into a lot of those allegations now, that is investigating whether the church ran, and this is straight from court documents, right? This isn't some like conspiracy theory, that, you know, whether the, you know, church ran a child sex trafficking ring responsible for, quote, widespread sexual abuse of minors dating back decades that was, quote, covered up and not reported to law enforcement. I think some of the frustration is that, like, you know, you've got one side, the church, saying, you know, those are, you know, we've been subjected to like high pressure tactics, and kind of like strong arm tactics to get us to settle. And, you know, victims saying like, we've simply like asked for investigation into evidence of crimes of child rape. I mean, that's kind of where things stand. I think in the end, it seemed,
This is Jean Marie Laskus with the podcast Cement City. So there's this election coming up, a big one, and one guy's been indicted. People are talking voter fraud. Democracy itself is on the line. Sound familiar? Well, this isn't that election. This one is in Denora, Pennsylvania, a dying town in the middle of nowhere, where I bought a house and stayed for 3 years. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The takeaway is that, you know, it's going to be, barring a settlement, it'll be at least until January, until the case kind of progresses meaningfully.
Somebody texted in and said, this is exhausting, very difficult to comprehend. And to that, I would say, you're damn right it's exhausting and very difficult to comprehend. And you can only imagine how exasperating it is for the victims. So let me try to get through a little bit of this. When it comes to the pie, if you will, of the church's assets that we're talking about, right, of what they have, what the amount that they have from which to pay claims, where does insurance factor into that? Because if they have insurance for this, why is the church fighting it, or is an insurance a party to the bankruptcy?
No, I mean, look, there's insurers are definitely involved, and in other settlements, you've seen insurers put up part of the settlement, right? I think that what the church's plan has conveyed is basically like, you guys figure it out with the insurance companies. This is kind of what we can put up. You know, the victim side is arguing, you know, we want a little more from you, you know, the church, and then we expect quite a bit from your insurers. As far as, you know, what's difficult is that, like, we've reported this, right, that there have been offers to buy something like Christopher Homes, which is, like, the housing ministry, and it's got a bunch of housing complex, you know, a bunch of, like, housing units that, you know, multi-million dollar offer, and, you know, including one that would be contingent on that money being used to fund a settlement with victims, right? And that just hasn't been accepted, right? It just hasn't been acted on. And so to the extent you can sit here and, you know, certainly like it can be negotiated whether, you know, I understand that the church is in a position where like we don't want to give anything up that affects our ability to carry out our mission. But could like the church continue to be the church if it sells like some of its like housing ministries, right? I think that's a question we've been waiting to get the answer to.
Well, yeah, but again, you're talking about the Archdiocese of New Orleans and assets that they have, but and again, this is a nonprofit, not a corporate structure, but the Catholic Church has God knows how much assets, if they want to do the right thing, that they could still pursue their mission in the Archdiocese of New Orleans and still compensate the victims without paying a lawyer for, or the lawyers involved in this, $40 million, right? I mean, that is just crazy. This is just nuts to me, Ramon. I'm trying to make sense of it. And then when you talk about the latest report, they spent another $350,000 for Mo Meji to say, all right, tell you what we're going to do. Nobody gets paid for 3 months. Y'all work it out. So you mean we're not going to get paid at all? No, you'll still get paid. And that's why I use the phrase cash flow, because I don't understand where the incentive comes in other than from a cash flow standpoint. Am I missing something here or not? What did they get for $350,000? What did Mo come up with?
Yeah, I mean, at this, I think that, you know, you have one side of the bankruptcy saying not much. I mean, I think that at this stage you have I think universally the tide has turned as far as like this has gone on too long and it has cost too much money, right? I think that wasn't necessarily true at this time last year, but that certainly has changed as this has dragged out, especially when some of the details as far as like exactly, you know, who's been billing most of it, and we've discussed that on this program, but as far as like what we came up with, you know, what the report came up with, I mean, I think it's a fair criticism to say that it probably didn't come up with much other than it seems like finally the suggestion has been made. Like, let's find out exactly how much in assets the church has, right? And in terms of exactly how much land that's worth, what it can be compelled to divest in. And certainly the church has sold some stuff, but again, I mean, I think that like having an examiner kind of come in and put, I discussed the offer a little while ago for the housing ministry, right? That there are offers that they're sitting on to sell that.
But what I'm saying is it's a false comparison to say that, because here's what I think the Archdiocese is trying to say, okay, we'd like to provide housing with Christopher Homes, but we can't, because we're going to have to sell it to pay these bankruptcy victims, not bankruptcy victims, these sex abuse victims, in essence, making them the bad guys, when in fact the Catholic Church itself has God knows how much in assets where they could easily compensate the victims of sexual predators that the church itself screwed up the handling of and still maintain their mission right. Their mission.
That is all true. I'm going to cut you off. That's all true. It's just that, like, again, like, it seems like what this report made clear is that, like, still the court does not have a command on how much assets it has, right? I think that the idea is a true examination will probably reveal that it has more than it has indicated that it has. And so the idea being that that's a little bit of pressure to try to see if you can get to try to settle before somebody comes in and, you know, and reviews. And you know, once you get someone in there, then you start, you know, you open the door to reviewing the appropriateness of some of the fees that have been billed, right? And, you know, in other cases we've seen, in other church bankruptcies, we've seen excessive fees get clawed back. So, you know, once you get an examiner in there, does their scope open to not only getting, you know, a true breakdown of how much the debtor has, in this case the church, but then does that inquiry then open into, okay, well, let's look at some of these fees that have been paid out. And in other cases when that's happened, they've clawed some of that back. So,
and although a nonprofit and a church, it has the same protections as does a Fortune 500 company. That's accurate?
Well, I mean, even in some cases, even more, right? I mean, I think that the church is uniquely positioned in that they get a lot of consideration. I mean, one of the questions is, like, should financial control be taken away from the archbishop and his appointed man who is running, you know, the bankruptcy? And, I mean, their argument is basically, like, you can't take that away from us because that would violate the Constitution's separation of church and state, right? And that's something that a Fortune 500 company could not argue. So, no, I mean, it is a relatively comfortable position to be in Chapter 11 bankruptcy for an organization like the Roman Catholic Church.
And forget what's right or wrong. Thank you, Ramon. I appreciate your time. We'll talk to you again soon. We'll find out what Noel Norman's got planned for us when we come back on WWL.
I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town, a dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.